This is a Storage Switzerland podcast.
Welcome to the podcast. We just wrapped up a big week at the Flash Memory Summit in Santa Clara, California. Guys talking to everybody, it seems, in the business. So rapid fire this week. We're going to start off with an overview of the show. George.
In parallel to this event growing, we've also got to watch the 49ers' new stadium being built. And I'm not sure what is growing faster, that stadium or this event. In fact, I'm pretty sure the parking at both were equally bad. But I'll tell you, the key thing for me is just the scale of this event. I've been going for 8 years now. 8 years ago, I was able to actually participate and sit in sessions. Last year, I was probably on four or five different speaking things. This year, it was back-to-back meetings, just sitting down, meeting with vendors. And as you'll see from the list that it's going to follow, it was a lot.
Eric.
I'll echo that comment about all the big players were there. And, you know, maybe because everybody has a Flash solution now that didn't used to. But one of the things that I've noticed is that Flash users are maturing. You know, we reference a piece a number of times that I wrote for Micron a little while back about SLC or MLC. Does it really matter anymore? And the short answer is no. Users have really moved on from that question and are looking instead, you know, what the manufacturer's specs show for endurance, you know, drive fills per day and total bytes written and that sort of thing. They're also looking at efficiency and sort of second level kinds of discussions instead of the stuff we talked about a year or two ago.
Colin, Flash is just the big part of this business now, isn't it?
In the past, we used to see some of, you know, these emerging players or players that were focused purely in the Flash market attending the show. But this year we had all the big names. We had HP, we had EMC, IBM, Dell, HDS. So the conference clearly has grown up.
Let's go on a rapid fire. The different companies who were there. HP, George, start us off.
From a HP perspective, is really interesting, right? They're one of the more traditional legacy storage architectures, but they were one of the last guys out, if you will, when it was 3PAR. And so they have more of a modern legacy architecture, if there is such a thing. And I think it's one of the more appropriate architectures for Flash. So when a company like HP delivers an all-flash array, I'm much less concerned about what that back-end architecture within the storage system is. And I think that's really becoming prevalent, and I think they're really seeing a lot of success in the market.
HDS, George.
Clearly, again, one of those legacy companies, you know, enterprise storage type of guys. But again, has an architecture that is probably pretty suitable to Flash. Hugh Yoshida and I, their CTO, got into an interesting discussion, let's call it, via a series of blogs talking about whether all flash would be the future of the data center and really was what the role of the hard disk will be. It's probably a broader conversation, but I think that's something that the industry is still wrestling with. As flash becomes less expensive, what do we do with hard disks?
Eric.
You know, one of the things about HDS is, you know, that they've always had a real legacy of technology, you know, in the big three-letter companies. And I think people are going to be, you know, surprised who don't know HDS very well, might be surprised to see how much they really have to offer in the flash market, because it's right up their alley.
Colin.
When I think of HDS, I think of hardened technology, you know, the classic Japanese over-engineered solutions, which for end users is a big benefit. And when we look at flash, we certainly want to make sure that infrastructure is going to be rock solid, particularly since critical application workloads are going to be running on them. So it'll be interesting to see how HDS positions themselves going forward.
Cashbox, Colin.
Cashbox is a company that's focused in cache acceleration software. So we've covered a number of these companies in the past. So they do what you might expect. They provide block or LUN level I/O acceleration, but where they're really differentiating themselves is they're focused on accelerating at the application layer. So their intellectual property consists of being able to, at a granular level, analyze I/O from the application and then on the fly tweak things in the actual cache substrate to facilitate better I/O from an application performance perspective. So interesting company.
I think the big thing with Cashbox is, you know, when we first started talking to them, I thought, oh geez, not another server-side cache company. But they are doing something different that I think that Colin touched on, this whole application-centric sort of approach to things. And I think that's interesting because one of the things we've been complaining about lately in our articles and webinars and stuff like that is to stop throwing cash at everything and be intelligent about it and do some analysis. Well, Now we've got a caching software that actually does the analysis for you. So I don't know if we need to be saying that anymore. Now, in theory, you could actually throw Flash at the problem and then let the software apply the analysis to make sure you're efficiently and correctly using the Flash resource.
Let's go now to Contour. Eric.
Yeah, Contour Semiconductor is an interesting company. It's a technology company that's not into production. They actually have a new technology for PCM, which stands for phase change memory, and it's actually faster. PCM is faster than NAND flash and has better endurance, but it's more expensive. And Contour's technology addresses this expense issue to some extent by using diodes instead of transistors as the main elements for storage. There's some other things that they're doing, but it's an interesting technology that may bring PCM to the forefront and make it more of a viable technology for more use cases.
LSI, Eric.
Yeah, LSI showed us a little bit about some testing results for their products that were involving mixed workloads and how they were kind of surprised to find that flash testing, which is not that unusual, is kind of stuck in the dark ages, where they're probably using testing methods that were maybe more designed for hard drives. The problem that they were saying with a lot of flash testing is that it doesn't test mixed workloads. It tests either all reads or all writes, and which is not a realistic scenario. And their SandForce caching software does a really good job on mixed workloads.
George.
I think actually it's the controller software, but the challenge that we're seeing nowadays is a lot of the tests come out and they're 100% writes and 100% reads, and those show really great numbers. But once you start to mix that set, you end up with this performance. I think the guy called it the performance sink or no, bathtub. That was it. And so I think that's the real challenge is how do we evolve our testing methodology so we more appropriately test flash as it was designed to be tested. And it also kind of really clarifies to me the value add of different flash controller technology, right? I think there's this natural assumption that the NAND manufacturers have the big advantage here. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case. What I keep seeing is at least as much innovation coming from the guys that don't manufacture NAND as the guys that do.
SanDisk, George.
SanDisk is interesting from a number of perspectives, right? They've been on a buying frenzy lately, getting they purchased FlashSoft, they purchased, of course, there's just recently Fusion.io. A while back, they purchased Pliant. And so what we talked about with them is how are they going to integrate all of this and go forward into the market? Their plan, if they can pull it off, is to try to stay focused on being a supplier to the guys that build storage systems. So a supplier to Dell, a supplier to HP, a supplier to EMC. It'll be interesting to see how well they do that, because up until Fusion.io, I could see that happening. Most of the organization they bought did not have a big enterprise sales organization. Fusion.io was selling to the enterprise. So it would be interesting to see how they map that in.
Colin.
Just listening, it's George here. My first personal interaction with SanDisk was looking at their logo on the side of a hockey rink arena. So they were really playing in that consumer side for a while. So I think to George's point, it will be interesting to see how they kind of mesh into this new enterprise world. But through some of these acquisitions, they're going to be getting entree to that, both with the sales force that they've acquired as well as the technology. So it'll be interesting to see how they execute.
IBM, George.
IBM's been one of the legacy guys that I can remember being at the Flash Memory Summit from day one. I mean, what a lot of people forget is IBM has a huge research arm. They're not just the guys that we see in the enterprise, right? So these guys spend a lot of money on R&D. They've invested a lot in Flash. They also made what I think is one of the best Flash acquisitions so far in the history of the industry, is the purchase of Texas Memory Systems. They got a 30-year-old company that had been profitable for two decades with a lot of Flash knowledge. And there was a speaker who I probably shouldn't say, one of the keynotes, his opening slide was, if you're a Flash controller designer, we're hiring. I mean, that's how desperate people are to get good, solid Flash controller manufacturers today, right? Or developers, right? So there's a lot of going there, and to get somebody with 20 years experience, that's huge. And so now to see that start to integrate, they're integrating into the SAN volume controllers that has been an IBM product for a while. So it'll be interesting to see them execute in the market as well. But they clearly have bought themselves a great foundation in Texas Memory Systems.
Extreme.io, column.
Extreme.io, just as a recap, was a company that EMC acquired 3 years ago. They have an all-flash scale-out architecture. And one of the things they talked about in the show that I think is pretty smart is that they recognize that the way enterprises are adopting flash, it's very tactical. You have like an OLTP environment or some other application, whether it's virtualized or not, and performance is just taking a big hit. So it's, you know, a good way to solve that is through flash. But then over time, people want to start, you know, investing more into that asset because they've got money invested in it. So then they gradually start to throw other workloads on it. And then eventually gets to a point where the majority of the workloads in the data center are running on that asset. Well, you know, as you might imagine, that's going to actually cause some performance issues because the system is typically provisioned first for that, you know, initial application issue. But then as you start throwing more workloads on it, you actually start taxing the system. So what Extreme.io is doing is they're kind of helping people with that initial, you know, cost of entry, meaning that instead of having to go out and buy an all-flash array and make a big investment up front, you can deploy their scale-out architecture either down to an individual node, and then even more granularly, you can actually populate that single node with just the right amount of resources you need to run that application. And then over time, as you want to start to throw more workloads on that infrastructure, then you can start to add additional nodes to it. So it really kind of addresses this issue of trying to tactically solve a problem and then coming back later and wanting to throw more applications on the resource.
Yeah, I think that column nailed it. I think the two big news points that came out, it was we talked about it at the Flash Memory Summit, but EMC did a big announcement at the beginning of July on it. But the first is they're adding compression. Prior to this, it was deduplication only. So that's a big addition to the environment, allows them to further optimize workloads that have unique data sets. So that's really important. One of the keys, in my opinion, to being successful in the all-flash market is to be able to do both dedupe and compression and do it in line. The second is, and Colm touched on it pretty well, sort of this, I don't know, I have a good word for it, Colm, but I call it the half node, where you buy a node that it's a regular node, but it only has half of the capacity in it. And again, allows somebody to start small, address that a pressing pain point, and then move on and scale out. So I think it's two big announcements for them.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, George, you know, in the past, scale architectures, you know, got a little bit of a bad name because people would have to invest in a three-node environment. And if you're just trying to solve, you know, a specific application pain point, you may be buying more than you really need. But I think this really sort of takes away some of those objections.
Tejal, George.
Well, you know, Charlie, Tejal, it's sort of interesting. You know, we talk about these different delivery mechanisms. We just spent a lot of time talking about, you know, what we're calling scale smart architectures. There's another architecture that we haven't spent a lot of time on yet, and the next few guys we will, is this sort of more of a hybrid approach to it, where we're still going to continue to use hard drives. What I like about Tejal is they sort of take a different approach. I call it reverse hybrid. They basically lead with the all-flash array and then later start adding in hard drives. So again, solve that initial pain point, make sure you get it, and then they have some really nice analytics that show you, okay, you don't really need to have this particular set of data on this class of storage. Why don't you buy a set of hard drives and we'll start migrating them down. So kind of an interesting technique.
Eric.
Yeah, Tejal is interesting. We've known about them for a long time and written a lot about them, but it was good to sit down and hear hear Rob talk about their technology. I mean, the 3400 model, 22 terabytes in a single frame of all flash, up to 200, almost 250 terabytes in a scale up architecture. I mean, that's a lot of flash. And he made a great point. He said, flash in abundance, cures a lot of ills because, in his words, memory solves lousy code, which is, you know, kind of a theme that we've seen a lot of. But I was impressed with Tejal's technology and really what they can do.
OWC, George.
Well, you know, Charlie, OWC is a favorite of probably you and I because of our Mac background, right? And they've always been a long time kind of advocate of third party peripherals for the Mac. They've been a leader in Thunderbolt exploitation. We did a video a while back that I'm sure we can link to on the PCIe expansion chassis for the Mac. They've got a couple of new products coming out that are either all solid state or a mixture. What's interesting to them, that kind of the conversation had really nothing to do with the Flash Memory Summit, which I thought was interesting. But They've developed a strong relationship with a company that makes a product called SoftNAS, which is software-based RAID, which forever has been sort of, you know, uninvited guests to the data center. We've always claimed that hardware arrays and hardware RAID is better. And now, you know, they're kind of saying, look, with all the processing power we have, maybe it's better to let the software do it and do it on the processor because it's got this extra capabilities. Well, that drives down the price of the hardware. It also gives you some really interesting data exchange capabilities where you can take the array and plug it in somewhere else and things like that. So kind of we didn't really spend a lot of time talking about flash related stuff, but I was really intrigued by their comments about software.
HGST, Eric.
Yeah, HGST is a division of Western Digital, and they've been snapping up companies in the flash space, specifically Viridant, Steck, and another company, a software company called Velobit, all three of which we've written quite a bit about. What they announced at this show was FlashMax 3, which is basically Viridant's the technology they've got from Viridant, which is a high performance, extremely high performance PCIe card for the hyperscale market and for big enterprise applications, up to a little over 2 terabytes on a card, so a lot of capacity. They also talked about ServerCache 4.0, which is basically the latest release from the technology they bought from Velobit. They made a really good point. This is actually server-side caching, which really uses its ability to do an innovative deduplication and data compression and data reduction to improve performance and that kind of thing. But one of the things that HGST made a real point of is that they've really done a real job of integrating the engineering teams and the technology that they bought. They're not just dropping them under their nameplate. They really are trying to integrate this technology, and it's obvious that they're committed to being a player in flash as well as spinning disk.
George,
what I took away from that conversation that was of interest, other than what you just said, Eric, was the how quickly they're dropping the brand name, so to speak. Like it seemed to me like the Viridant as a name was gone. They still had the product name. That it seemed mm-hmm. like Velobit would be gone pretty quickly, and it seemed like Steck is gone pretty quickly, right? So you kind of you could contrast that with SanDisk, who's almost the opposite, right? They're letting those other brand names still run. What are your thoughts on that?
That's actually a really good point. I was thinking about that with these other companies that are saying OCZ by Toshiba, right? I mean, it's the same thing that they're doing. I don't know. I mean, they were very careful at this in this meeting to emphasize how much that they haven't. That they really are integrating engineering teams and really integrating technologies. It just seems like from a branding perspective, they're not keeping the names.
Colin.
When Eric was talking, I started to think about what SanDisk's been doing in terms of making all these strategic acquisitions and really kind of going away from the older OEM model. And what I wanted to ask you, Eric, are they going to be going into the enterprise space like SanDisk is, or do they plan to continue to go through their traditional OEM channels, or what's their plan there?
We didn't really talk to them as much about the go-to-market part. I mean, these are clearly enterprise products. The FlashMax product is really for big companies and the hyperscale folks who, are certainly big companies. So how they're selling to them, I'm assuming that they're doing some direct, but we didn't really talk about the channel.
Let me throw this over to you, George, because I'm curious about this. Given the fact that, we saw this huge influx of players at the show, namely the big names everyone's familiar with, what do you think HGST has to do to be successful to move product in a very competitive market space?
I think it'll be interesting to see because we saw a huge amount of players and think how many times today we said and so-and-so is bought by so-and-so. We're seeing a consolidation and an explosion in the industry at the same time, right? It's like contracting and expanding simultaneously, and not too many industries do that. I think it's a testament to memory. I think my opinion is both HGST and SanDisk are going to have some interesting choices to make, right? Because we are seeing the rise of a vendor that is traditionally a supplier to the suppliers have the ability to go direct to the enterprise. And unlike in previous eras, we now have enterprises that buy, in some cases, at higher volume than the EMCs, HPs, and IBMs of the world, and namely Google, Facebook, Twitter, those Microsoft, those kind of guys. They're cutting deals direct now, and all of these guys have said that, you know, they kind of look at the cloud providers as a different entity. Well, if cloud reaches its eventual conclusion where most of us get most of our services through the cloud, you know, in 10 years, do we need an EMC? Do we need an HP? Those are big questions.
Bitmicro, Eric.
Yeah, this is a company that has a new high-capacity PCIe line. It actually goes up to 6 terabytes on a card, and what they're really trying to do is address what they see is an unmet need in the market for high capacity flash cards server side, and the way that they're doing that is they have a new architecture that separates the memory chips themselves from the controller chips on the board, and by doing this, it allows them to increase the number of memory chips that they put behind each controller. The controller chips from a real estate perspective are quite a bit larger than memory chips. And so if you can leverage a way to increase that ratio, then you can get some pretty amazing capacities. And this is quite a bit larger than, according to them, than any other competitor out there. So what they're seeing with this is, what they're trying to go after is to some extent, all flash arrays that they can give people a way to put 50 terabytes of flash capacity into a box via the PCIe bus and get some pretty good performance for in-memory applications and the kind of real-time stuff and big data applications.
Colin.
Yeah, this was probably, I think, the first briefing I had when I came over to Storage Switzerland, which is now over a year and a half ago. And the only comment I have, because I think you did a great job summing that up, Eric, is that, you know, Bitmicro, unlike someone who is coming into the market and trying to establish themselves, they had, you know, prior to their entry into the commercial space, been a pretty big player in the government, specifically with defense contractors and their technology. Isn't that right, Eric?
Yep. Yeah, they're actually trying to... They're seeing this as a way to get into the enterprise through this these kinds of applications away from their traditional industry and military.
George, Dell Computer.
Well, you know, Dell is one of those sort of kind of hybrid companies that we sort of mentioned earlier. Again, big company that we didn't normally expect to see at this show, at least in a participant standpoint, and they're clearly there. They had a private room. They were serious about making Flash Memory Summit a success for them. I think what's interesting is we all know that Dell kind of rolled itself private. I think Michael Dell calls themselves the world's largest startup, right? And so kind of an interesting time for them. From a technology standpoint, you know, what they're claiming is that only about 2-3% of their customers end up buying an all-flash array when almost 100% of their customers are presented with one. And I think that in a large extent, that's a testament to their, almost a decade old now data progression technology that is really good at moving data back and forth between tiers. And at the same time, they're claiming that their solid state disk revenue is higher than their hard disk revenue. So even though their customers are buying hard disk, they're still showing confidence in Dell to supply solid state storage. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I think that, you know, we'll see continued evolution out of there. And, I like Dell personally, and I'd like to see them be successful.
Eric.
Dell is another one of the big companies that would be conspicuous by their absence. They also had a booth. It was pretty small, but I think from now on, we're going to see not just all the big suppliers, but also all the big systems companies paying attention to flash like they didn't, two or three years ago.
Colin.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, Charlie, is that Dell actually has done a great job with bundling in software with their arrays. And that's important because when you look at, an investment in flash architecture, it's not just about, the hardware. It's really the total cost of ownership. And a big part of that is software licensing and software maintenance. And when you look at how they bundle that in now, not only with their traditional storage architectures, but now with the hybrid arrays, It's pretty compelling. So, you know, that's something about them that I think is it's going to be interesting to watch.
George, let's talk about Violin Memory Systems.
Okay, let's. So Violin's been very interesting lately, right? They went public, what, late last year? I think around Flash Memory Summit time last year. They were soundly criticized by being a hardware-only play, which I personally didn't see an issue with, but apparently everybody else did. And so they've been scrambling to try to provide software solutions. And I think they've done, in some areas, a really good job. I think their Windows box is very interesting. They have a unit that they essentially put Windows 2012 on. I think there's a lot of interesting capabilities as a result of being able to do that. I think that recently they've added, let's call it a more enterprise offering on technology that they own now, but comes from another source. And I'm being vague because I'm not sure I'm allowed to comment on that. But they're going to add all the capabilities you expect to have in Array, like replication and snapshots and all those sort of things. Deduplication and compression is certainly on the radar screen. So, they're going to have a complete software offering. It'll be interesting to see how well that can get integrated into their solutions and how effective it'll be. The other thing they announced is very aggressive pricing for their solutions. They're now delivering a solution that's well under 100K. So for them and in their market, that's a very aggressively priced product.
Diablo, column.
So we've been covering Diablo since, I want to say it's VMworld last year. What's interesting about them is when we look at how server-side flash has typically been architected, is that there's some sort of PCIe interface or maybe the drive form factor SSD. But what Diablo does is they actually use a onboard DIMM, which in effect acts like DRAM. So now you have a direct interface to the motherboard. You know, the latency is much less. And the other thing that they did, you know, from a strategic standpoint, which makes a lot of sense, is that they partnered with SanDisk so that you can use SanDisk's caching software to accelerate I/O into their hardware DIMM products. So they continue to have a strong presence not only at FMS, but we're seeing them. We're probably going to be seeing them again in a few weeks at VMworld. Very interesting company. Lots of good write-ups on the site about them. So we encourage people to take a look.
Solid Fire, Eric.
Solid Fire was telling us that their business just keeps growing, and apparently now it's not just with the service providers that was their initial customer base. They make all flash arrays, and their strategy was really to address the requirement that service providers initially had for predictable performance and quality of service, which is something else that they've always done. And their point now is that enterprise companies are interested in this same message. They also announced an integration with vSphere to provide basically users with the same ability to virtualize storage into performance and capacity resource pools and allocate them pretty much in the same way that SolidFire storage can now be allocated, through their front panel. So, this really gives VMware users a chance to sort of have the SolidFire experience, and it's pretty impressive.
Last one, Toshiba, Eric.
Toshiba, another example of kind of like Hitachi, a big, conservative, successful, innovative company that's all over the flash space. They've been buying folks. They've also been they're also making a big push into this. They bought a company called OCZ that we've worked with in the past quite a bit. A lot of technology there. An interesting combination because it addresses all the concerns people have about, had about OCZ. They like the technology, but they were concerned initially about, whether they were going to be a viable company, and obviously Toshiba takes care of that. Toshiba was their primary supplier, so it alleviates all those supply concerns as well. So, but Toshiba is another company that you're going to see more and more of, and especially in the system space and in the end user space, probably more than people realize.
We had a lot of big players. We've had a lot of net new companies, and we had a lot of consolidation, right? And I think that's a trend that we'll see continue for quite a while, because I think we haven't really defined yet what exactly we can do with a pure memory environment. And so as we haven't really, all we're doing right now is accelerating stuff that already is in place. We're just now starting to see applications, if you will, specifically invented to take advantage of a pure memory environment. And that's going to allow us to do really cool and new things that, you know, consumers and everybody will benefit from, but it's going to drive data centers to new levels. And I think that's why we're seeing this huge growth at the Flash Memory Summit.
Coming up later this month, the whole team will be in San Francisco for VMworld. Yeah, you'll get some podcasts out of VMworld for sure. And we'll definitely be back next week for the wrap-up number 4. We'll go over some of the articles that we have on Storage Swiss for you. For George Crump, Colm Keegan, and Eric Slack, I'm Charlie Hodges. Thanks for joining us on the Storage Podcast.
For more, go to StorageSwiss.com.